Parallel Quest is a podcast of Steel Lake Studio. Please be sure to head over to steellakestudio.com to see more of what we do, and you can subscribe to our email list so you never have to miss a podcast, a blog post, or any of the content that we provide. Today's episode of Parallel Quest is brought to you by Audible. Audible is a fantastic place to get premium audio content. They have over thousands of selections ranging from audiobooks, audio dramas, podcasts, and a great selection of Audible originals, which span all genres. Today, you can claim your 30-day free trial of Audible by going to audibletrial.com/parallelquest. Audible is one of our favorite resources for taking in great stories during our found time, whether it is while cutting the lawn, gardening, doing the dishes, or just going on a walk. Audible is a great way to escape into a great adventure or gather more information on your latest interest. We talk about many stories on this podcast that are made into great audiobooks, like The Phantom Tollbooth and The Fellowship of the Ring, so be sure to head over to audibletrial.com/parallelquest to claim your free audiobook today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/parallelquest. Now, put on your wizard's cap or take up your dragon slaying sword as we dive into our first genre crush, where we discuss some of our favorite elements of the fantasy genre. Welcome to Parallel Quest, a podcast where two friends talk about the stories we love and tell the personal stories of the impact they've had on our lives. I'm one of your hosts, Cody Haggard, and alongside me, or maybe better said, across the internet, my great friend and co-host, Zach Butler. Zach, how are you doing today?
What up, Cody? This is a new one for us, recording in the AM today.
Yeah, the AM at our freshest.
I know, we're got those ideas percolating and ready to rock and roll, and I'm definitely ready to talk about our topic today, man.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. Today we are doing what we call a genre crush, where we talk about some of our favorite things from a specific genre, and we'll explain a little bit more when we get there. But Zach, what's been going on for you? What has been going on in the life of Mr. Zach Butler?
Well, since we are still in lockdown mode here in Pennsylvania, I've been spending most of my free time outside of work, which I'm very thankful and blessed that is still considered life essential to be selling Chick-fil-A. But outside of that, I've actually had a lot of time now to work on some projects and get some reading done. And I actually just finished an incredible documentary called Tiger King, which is all the rage right now at the time of this recording.
It's popular.
Oh my goodness. Have you seen it?
No, not yet.
It is a show that I will finish an episode and I will think to myself, man, that is the craziest thing I have ever seen in my life. And I am not exaggerating. And then the next episode plays and I go, nope, that's actually the craziest thing I have ever seen in my life. It somehow manages to one-up itself every episode for 7 episodes. It is incredible. It's incredible storytelling, first of all, because I'm sure it's being told a specific way to make these characters or these actual real people seem a little crazier than they are. But at the same time, they don't have to try too hard. Like, these people are very unique individuals. But I highly recommend, if you listen to this at a later date, if you haven't seen Tiger King, like, you gotta go watch it. It is a real treat, and I'm very glad it came out as this whole coronavirus hit, because I'm sure a lot of people are watching it.
Yeah, it's been making the rounds. I've seen it basically on all social media. People are talking about it all the time, so I'll have to check it out. That's really neat.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned you guys were in the midst of lockdown. So for those of you who are listening, we're in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. So as we look back on this in a few months, we'll know how bad it really was and and how much it affected us. But is Pennsylvania on an actual lockdown, or are you guys on a stay-at-home order?
We're at a stay-at-home order. We basically are only operating with quote-unquote life essential businesses. I know a lot of states in the Northeast are doing that, as well as out west. Where basically just means if you're not a part of a business that is life sustaining, which is kind of a broad term in Pennsylvania, because the beer and alcohol, liquor stores are still open. So there's some gray area. But if you're not life sustaining, you're at home watching Netflix, doing your thing. And then our governor hasn't come out and said when this is going to be lifted. It's kind of a ambiguous indefinite time. So,
okay.
It's not as extreme as I know. It's New York City, where it's nobody's allowed to leave. Or they really are strongly encouraging nobody at all, unless you're going to a grocery store or a hospital, leave. Yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely changed life for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's changed life. It's changed Steel Lake Studio. It's had an impact on us in a way, because all of this was supposed to be up and going around the time that the drastic measures started coming, and it's what a time. What a time to start a business, right?
Oh, I know, right?
So it's been interesting, but it's been cool. I've stayed at home. I'm still going to work. I work for an essential business. We supply a lot of manufacturing materials for other businesses that make the stuff that you all need to live. But yeah, it's been an interesting time. I've been spending good quality time with my kids, my family, and a little bit of quality time with my PC.
Yeah.
that new Call of Duty Warzone came out in the midst of all of this, and I've been getting on that grind. It's been interesting to find out, man, I just don't have it anymore.
No.
there's some people out there who are real good. I played some games with my kids and the family, and we've gone outside and played in the backyard a lot. So it's got, in some ways it's really nice, because you find out really quickly all the things that you really don't need to do and all the things you really do need to do, which is cool.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting time. I actually been listening to a lot of audiobooks. I just wrapped up The Neverending Story. Zach, have you ever seen the movie or read the book?
Yes. That's with the that big dragon or dog looking thing.
Yeah, the dragon that looks like a dog. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, that was that's going way back. Isn't there a giant turtle in that thing too?
Yeah. Yep, a giant turtle that is I can't remember her name. Mora?
Yeah, something
in
that.
Swamps of Sadness. And dude, I gotta be honest, man. I always knew that the person who created the book, his name's Michael Ende, he's German. I always knew he hated the movie, absolutely hated the movie, and to the point of where he wanted to halt production on it. He just disliked it that much, and I think there was a lawsuit over it. I think The Neverending Story needs to be a later episode, because it's very interesting. But I understand why, because the first movie, I didn't realize that there was three. The first movie is only the first half of the book. There is a whole bunch of stuff that happens halfway through the book, when Bastion, when he goes into what's called Fantastica. That is kind of where the movie decides to end, when he saves Fantastica. That's the end of the first story arc, and then there's a whole adventure of Bastion being inside Fantastica, and there's a whole journey there, which I understand why the author didn't like the film, because the film, I think, in some ways, lost sight of what the overarching theme of the book was. And okay. It just wasn't in there. And it was, it's one of those things where the theme itself is very, very important to the author, and you can tell that. So when that doesn't show up in the movie, I could see how he was frustrated. But man, it was really good. It was a long book, dude. Like, I think the audiobook was like 13 hours. It took me like 2 weeks to get through. But yeah, I've been listening to it while I've had basically while I do the packing of stuff at work. And
it's for kids, right? It's a kids story, right?
It's supposed to be, I think.
Is it like a kids story the same way like the first Lord of the Ring, The Hobbit, is supposed to be a kid's story?
Yeah, and maybe even more so. Like, it'd be like telling a kid, like, hey, this is a kid's story, but it's going to take you as long to read as it will to read The Fellowship of the Ring. You know, it's a long book, man, and it's very good, and it's very, and the theme would be very, very good for kids. Because basically, without giving away spoilers or anything, the theme of the book is it's a coming of age story, but it's told in a very, very different way. Follows the hero's journey to a T, but basically kind of finding out who you are, and it's done really well. So anyway, I've had an interesting time, but I'm excited to get into this episode. So we're doing what we call a genre crush, and we're going over fantasy. And Zach, this is kind of your idea. You came up with the name Genre Crush. So why don't you explain a little bit of the rules to us and what we're going to be talking about for the next 50 minutes or so?
Yeah. So Genre Crush is just an episode or an idea I had where we're just going to delve into a specific genre. We're going to talk about maybe a little bit of the history of the genre, some influential works, including movies and books and video games that have kind of influenced the genre, that have shaped our pop culture around it. I also wanted it to be a episode where we also just share our favorite genre appropriate stories. From it today for fantasy, but in the future for each specific genre. Just because everyone's got lots of interests, no one really sticks in one genre, but I think this one today, everyone's had a run-in with at some level. In the future, we'll get into more specific, real niche genres, but so some of the rules, just we're going to keep it fantasy. So if you don't like fantasy, maybe still give it a listen. Maybe you'll like fantasy after we're done. If you love fantasy, then hang with us, because we'll probably be talking about some of your favorite works or stories in this episode.
All right. Yeah. And especially if you don't like fantasy, I encourage you to listen in, because as we talk about certain things, you might figure out like, oh, yeah, I actually like more of that, what I call nerdy stuff than I thought. Because, dude, fantasy and nerd culture and geek culture and all that stuff, it's mainstream now, baby. Like,
oh, yeah. Man,
you know, I remember as a kid, I used to like have these Dragonlance Chronicles books, and I used to like hide them in my backpack. Like, I can't let anybody know that I'm reading this. And you could just tell from the cover, right? Like, oh, dude, you read one of those nerd books. And so now it's like no big deal. We can thank Game of Thrones for that, but I'm sure we'll get into that. So yeah. Zach, how do you want to start this bad boy off? You want to talk a little bit about the history of fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, this is not going to be an all-encompassing history, because fantasy is one of those genres that goes way, way back. And when I mean way, way back, I'm talking Epic of Gilgamesh all the way back.
Yeah, that's like BC era.
BC, this is like one of the earliest known works like that was ever recorded. This is how far back we're going. If you ever had an AP English class, you've probably read or at least heard of this. But so we can go all the way back there. Epic of Gilgamesh was an Akkadian epic. So for those of you who don't know, the Akkadians were just like an ancient Mesopotamian group of people. we have people in like Babylonian times where they're also creating epics. And a lot of times back then, they were creating these epics in order to tell a moral story of how people should act in society, because storytelling, and I'm sure Cody shares the same sentiment, it's one of the greatest, most complex devices and tools ever created by a person or by a society, because it tells a story, but it also tells a way of being, or it tells a way of acting. And it within it, it's complex enough that our brains follow along and our brains want to connect certain elements of stories together. I actually, this is going slightly off topic, but not so much. I actually heard or read that recently they did a study on the brain, and they had one person was just sitting there and they were told facts, and their brain would kind of light up a little bit every time they were told just a hard fact. But then they had a second person who was told a story. And within that story were the facts that the first person was being told, but it was told in a story form. And they looked at the brain on a scanner and they said it lit up like Las Vegas. Like it was just all over the place lighting up, because the brain loves stories. It loves hearing facts and it loves hearing things in a story form. So
yeah,
back then, a lot of the fantasy, and they didn't even call it fantasy then. This was just, these are stories about gods, and there were myths, and going from like the Greeks with their gods. And a lot of these were just stories told at the time to talk about a way of being. And I don't know if you have anything to say on the early history of fantasy, Cody, if you know much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm your English professor, but as far as the way that I've kind of researched this, is fantasy, as far as we know it today, has gone through an evolutionary process. It's kind of rooted in, like you said, myths and mythology. Mythology is very similar to how in modern times we do fantasy, where there's these stories that are fantastical and seem like there's supernatural elements to it, and there are these journeys to tell these larger themes. Typically, you have themes of, you know, the hero's journey is very much rooted in fantasy. You have Homer with the Iliad and the Odyssey, right? Odysseus, his journey is kind of that hero's journey, and I would consider the Odyssey to be a very, very, very early form of fantasy, right? You've got mm-hmm. him fighting cyclopses and monsters in the sea and all these things that are kind of staples in fantasy now. And it kind of evolved over time. You had mythology, and then you had folk tales, then you had the epic poems of the Anglican people, and mm-hmm. you know it's kind of been this way that we use you know, these storytellings or these mysterious creatures, right? That were, you know, back then they weren't sure. Maybe they did exist, maybe they didn't, to teach these overarching themes. And so you kind of see it evolve over time into folk tales and fairy tales. And now we just call everything fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think the Western epic fantasy is probably highly rooted in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. There might be some like Western epic fantasies that go back before that. I just don't know of any.
It's very rooted
that I can think about out of the top of my head.
Yeah, it's very our fantasy that most of our listeners in America and just kind of the North Americas will know is heavily influenced by Tolkien and very influenced by like European medieval age history. But what I wanted to just touch on too, what kind of separates fantasy from science fiction and horror and some of the other genres is that magical element. That's a big trope used in fantasy. You're always going to have some form of magic, whether it's as overt as Harry Potter or it's subtle, like in even Lord of the Rings. Like, there's not really all that much magic used in Lord of the Rings, at least in the books. It's more in the background, I would say, in Lord of the Rings than it is, say, in like a Harry Potter, where it's used frequently to solve problems. But yeah, that magic element, you have wizards. There's usually going to be some form of a wizard. You're going to have these creatures, usually orcs or goblins or trolls and elves and different creatures throughout the land. all these go into creating a fantasy. And like Cody said, a lot of that has been influenced by J.R.R. Tolkien, which certainly is not like the father of fantasy, but definitely made it popular for sure.
Right. And kind of what you see with Tolkien, and then you could say C.S. Lewis, some of these guys who were writing fantasy in the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, these guys, basically what they did is they took fairy tales, because a lot of times your fantasy was contained to like a short fairy tale, right? We all know the famous fairy tales, and they kind of took these concepts and created worlds, and then had these, they implemented an epic of the hero's journey that takes place within a world encompassed by all these different fairy tales that kids would have heard growing up, or bedtime story type of things. And so I don't know if they were the first guys to do it. You know, I'm not sure, but I know from, you know, studying Tolkien, highly influenced by Beowulf. Like, Beowulf was one of his favorite stories, and you know, loved fairy tales. I mean, he was an English professor, so he knew the English language, knew the history of English storytelling. He was very much, you know, an educated and smart person. So I think a lot of that influenced it. And then today we have basically in modern fantasy, every author who writes is influenced by Tolkien. I mean, the guy had a huge influence on the genre for sure.
Yeah. You have people like Stephen King saying, I wanted to write something as awesome as The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And he's a horror writer, doesn't really do fantasy, but yeah, you're right. He's had such a massive influence on our modern culture that those of you who have read or have seen The Song of Ice and Fire or Game of Thrones, Martin was heavily influenced by Tolkien. I mean, you see it all over the place. So that is just a quick ancient history up to relatively modern times. And also, you got stories like Alice in Wonderland, Wizard of Oz, just as we're on the topic, it popped into my head. You have, like what you were saying, these writers who are taking these fairy tales and kind of extrapolating them into their own works and telling their own stories. I for one, was a huge fan of The Wizard of Oz when I was younger. I didn't even know it was a book, actually, because I only ever saw the movie. But I loved Wizard of Oz, and that falls into the fantasy genre. There's witches, there's a little bit of magic there, so it has that mystical fantasy element.
Have you read it? Have you read The Wizard of Oz?
No, I have not. Ah, I need to get around to doing that.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's one of those things. I read it to my children about a year ago, and a lot of it's structured in a really cool way to read to your family, because the chapters are relatively short and all of them have some type of moral lesson within it. So it's very good. You can read it pretty quick. It's not that long, but it's good. It's very good. And the theme is strong in that one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. So moving on into modern fantasy, this is kind of where we're going to stay for the rest of the episode is modern fantasy. I know for me, I have two early memories of being exposed to the fantasy genre. The first one is I sat down to play my first ever game of Dungeons and Dragons when I was about 13. And for a lot of people, this is their first, at least, entry into a more hands-on or delving deeper into that fantasy genre is Dungeons and Dragons. And I'm sure I don't have to do an explanation, but I will for those who maybe have now crawled out from under a rock or something, because this is this is a huge, huge thing in pop culture. Dungeons and Dragons is a role-playing game where you sit down with your buddies, usually have one person leading the game. He is known as the Dungeon Master, or sometimes the Game Master, and he will direct the story element of the game. But basically, you take on the role of some fantasy character. So whether that's a goblin or a wizard or an elf, and you go on an adventure with your friends and you collect items and you fight monsters and you basically get to play the part of all the characters that you read about or see on television. And so I sat down with my buddies to play Dungeons and Dragons and I fell in love with it. I loved the immersion of it. I loved the fact that it was fully creative, because a lot of Dungeons and Dragons is kind of just rolling with the action. It takes a really good dungeon master to have a good Dungeons and Dragons game, because that person needs to really be on their toes, because as those of you who've played know that it can get derailed pretty quickly with silliness. And so if you have a good dungeon master, he can really roll with the silliness. But I loved Dungeons and Dragons. Have you played it or an offshoot of it? I know there's a lot of different versions out there now.
No, I've actually never sat down and played a traditional tabletop RPG, mainly because when I was at the point in life where I would be interested, I just didn't have the time to stick with a campaign. You know, we had Leo was really young. That's my oldest. He was really young at the time. And my brothers were starting up a group and I was never in a stage of life where I could do it. And then reading all those books and stuff to know the game was very intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah. When it first came out, I think it was in the 80s. It came out maybe 70s. When the first version of it came out. But I know by the time it got to me, it got a little more streamlined, but there were still 50 books out there because there were so many different versions. I think now it's a lot easier to play. I think there's only, I don't want to misspeak, but I think there's the main book that you read in order to sit down and start playing is not as burdensome as it once was. But So Dungeons and Dragons was one of the first ones. The second exposure to the fantasy genre I had was, and I'm sure for you as well, was Lord of the Rings. First one, Fellowship of the Ring, which I never finished when I first started to read it, because I think I was a little too young at the time to really understand and really get into it, because going from not knowing too much about the fantasy genre to going to Lord of the Rings is like going to a master class in the fantasy genre, because it is heavy, heavy fantasy. It's high fantasy. If we want to talk about high fantasy versus low fantasy, even within the fantasy genre, there's these two polarizing, not so much polarizing, I guess, but two sub-genres of the genre. But yeah, it was high fantasy, so it was a lot to take in for my little brain at the time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so those were my first two exposures to it. I don't know what started you on the fantasy train.
Yeah, I would have to say what started me was definitely video games, actually. Because growing up, I already told my story about Final Fantasy VII and how I love that. But for me, my brothers loved games that were RPGs, right? So they loved the Final Fantasy games, which I followed in their footsteps and played those. The Dragon Quest games, played those growing up. And what those kind of do is they take that classical tabletop RPG and they put it on a TV screen and try and get you to go through it. Which, Zach, have you ever played any of the Dragon Quest games? Or it used to be called Dragon Warrior when we were little. So those are very much, like, those are extremely influenced by Dungeons and Dragons, you know, where you're kind of going through a journey, you have a random encounter. They don't even have you, like, do any action combat, right? You kind of just pick through a menu of, are you going to attack? You can use a spell. So it's kind of like an interaction with the game, and the game is the dungeon master, and you're going through all the story. But kind of influenced by those, which got me interested in fantasy. And before Lord of the Rings kind of took over my interest, I do remember in 1999 or 2000, one of those years, getting a hold of Harry Potter and really liking Harry Potter. I read the books. I remember I got into it because a girl in my third grade class gave a book report on it. And I was like, wait a minute. This is absolutely the type of story I love. Like, these are the types of things I like to see in video games. And if I can read a book about it, that seems really, really cool. So, love that type of stuff. One of my favorite movies growing up as a kid, ever since I was really little, was Sword in the Stone. The legends of King Arthur were always attractive to me. And what turned me into a total fantasy nerd was when Lord of the Rings finally came out, right? When I believe it was 2001, and that was just when I went to the movie theater and saw it, I was like, this is what I love. This is for me. This is my thing. And so shortly after that, I tried reading Lord of the Rings, and it took me a long time before I could really sit down and read through it. I believe all three movies had come out by the time I was really able to tackle the books. I think it was in like sixth or seventh grade.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what introduced me to fantasy. But really what kind of made me find out it was my favorite genre is we had these books lying around the house that are called the Dragonlance Chronicles, which actually take place within the Dungeons & Dragons universe.
Oh, gosh.
And it's so we had these books lying around. We had the Saga series, I think it's called, or the Chronicles series. I don't know. There's so many now. and I've talked to a friend of mine who's read a huge amount of them. And for a future episode, he would be willing to come and talk to us about Dragonlance.
Oh, yes.
he's read more Dragonlance books than the average human being. And he seemed pretty excited about it. This is Austin, by the way.
Yeah, that is saying something because there are so many of those books. I went to my local used bookstore a few months ago, and there's like a whole, like, two shelves devoted to Dragonlance. And I've read the first one, but man, it's quite the feat.
The first one it reads a lot like you're playing a Dungeons & Dragons campaign.
It really does.
It really does.
It's all action. All action.
It's action. You know, things are dying left and right. But I just remember I found a box of these things, and Austin and I got a hold of them. And I remember we both read the first one. Like, I read it, and he borrowed mine. And you know, we both got through the main Chronicle series, and I remember we just nerded out over these things. But really what drew me in were the covers of these books. You had the elf, who was kind of dressed as a ranger, and the dwarf, he's like hunched over with his axe. You should look up the book cover, Dragons of Autumn Twilight. And when you see that book cover, you're like, yeah, I absolutely have to read this when you're a fantasy nerd. And so I read these, and it was at that moment where I was like, this is my genre. Like, this type of stuff is made for me. But I had to keep that stuff kind of on the down low because it wasn't really cool to like fantasy.
also, it wasn't really that cool to read comic books. It wasn't really that cool to do a lot of things that are super cool now, which is awesome. Awesome for people growing up now. But yeah, that was kind of like my earliest love of fantasy, because I was always more interested in an adventure that had swords and shields rather than, you know, guns and blasters. Lasers. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was always a fantasy over sci-fi. Not that I don't like sci-fi. And, you know, especially I like Star Wars a lot, but Star Wars is very fantasy influenced. Fantasy influenced.
Highly. Yeah.
Might not even be considered sci-fi. Maybe more like science fantasy, actually. But that's a more in-depth discussion, I think, than we can get into right now.
Yeah.
Or than I want to get into right now.
So would you say are you a more high fantasy or low fantasy nerd? Because we know, as you and I know, there are two subgenres within, there's many subgenres, but the two main subgenres within fantasy are high and low fantasy. And high fantasy, for those who don't know, is it takes the magic system very seriously. So think of authors like Brandon Sanderson, who they build this complex, it's basically the science of the world. So they have to be true to their magic system, and a lot of their characters' decisions and use of magic have like repercussions, and they have to do it under certain rules. Whereas low fantasy is more focused on the story and more focused on characters. Think of Harry Potter, for instance, where yes, there are some rules to magic, but a lot of times those rules are ambiguous or disregarded in favor of just moving the storyline along and making it more exciting. So which one do you fall more towards? Because we've both dabbled in both, but which ones do you, which genre, I guess?
Yeah, I think I like reading low fantasy more because they read really nice and quick and they're typically focused on the story. But I find there's a lot to appreciate by worlds built, like by Brandon Sanderson and you know, Tolkien. And I don't know if you would consider Terry Goodkind a high fantasy writer or not. I would say so. The Sword of Truth.
He's a weird blend.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird blend. And yeah, Game of Thrones, you know, probably considered high fantasy. And I'm on the edge with how I qualify Game of Thrones. I think you definitely qualify it as fantasy, but it feels a whole lot more like a modern take on mythology than kind of our typical genres of fantasy, because it's a blend of so much stuff. It reads like historical fiction. It's got fantasy influence. It's a very unique unique read, and I think because of how much it focuses on politics rather than the hero's journey and many vignettes of different characters coming together to create an epic. It's very unique, I think. I think Game of Thrones pulls off something that a lot of fantasy stories don't do. You know? And they kind of focus on the party going through a journey together, like the typical Dungeons and Dragons story. But yeah, Go ahead.
I was just going to say a lot of politics in that, like you really hit the nail on the head there. That I think that's what separates it from normal fantasy, is just the politics played in it. It's as if like House of Cards was a fantasy rather than like a modern TV show.
Right. And I think that I do read probably more low fantasy, and I probably watch more low fantasy, but you know, I'm not the type of guy who, if I'm watching something with magic, it doesn't have to make sense. It's magic. But I really, really appreciate when an author, writer, storyteller takes the time to make it make sense. Now, what I don't like in stories is when there's too many deus ex machina experiences, like the hand of God intervenes and, you know, she just got lucky. Like, oh man, come on. You couldn't have told that in a better way. And I think that happens a lot in low fantasy, especially because there aren't really any rules, right? Like the Patronus in Harry Potter. Like, why the heck is Harry Potter so good at Patronus, and why the heck is this thing so important? You know what I'm saying? Like,
You're getting in some dangerous territory there. There's some big fans out there that'll, well, this is why she decided to do this.
Yeah, I think if we're going to try and examine like the logic of a lot of things in Harry Potter, at the end of the day, decisions were made to tell the most intriguing story possible, yeah. You know? And I think she pulled it off. It's a great story. It's very, very, I would say, addictive. It's interesting to talk about a story as being addictive, but pulled off the you can't put the book down. You know, or you want to just watch the next movie. It's very good at that.
Yeah, I read Harry Potter. I think he's 11 turning 12 in the first book. And that was the exact age I was. So,
yeah,
it was Harry Potter hit at a time that it was meant for me and you. It was basically we grew up with Harry, and I would say like it kind of blends that high and low fantasy as well, because she created a really complex, rich world, and multiple schools and like a whole government for her magical world. So, but it really does focus just on Harry and his relationship with like his friends and Dumbledore. Absolutely addicting, man. It's written.
Oh yeah,
it's not amazingly like the quality of writing isn't like amazing. It's the story. She's such a good storyteller. And I think that happens a lot with really good authors, is they maybe don't have the best verbiage or they don't write in a super complex way, but I'm never one for knocking someone like that, because when I write, I don't go for like Nathaniel Hawthorne type of writing. I'm more the like, just understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think that's what she excels at.
And I think as we're kind of talking about this, just one thing I'll say is I think there's people who are very, very good storytellers who they use whatever medium they're using to tell a very good story. And then there's people who I would consider to be like true artists. Like, there are just phenomenal writers, and the written word is their art form, who just are able to write in such a way where it's like, wow, that's impressive. You painted that picture very well, concisely. You've used the English language or whatever language you're writing, and you've mastered it. And sometimes there's people who do both very well. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, what wins out, and we could say this is fortunate or unfortunate, is the power to tell a good story, right? And some people are willing to deal with mediocre writing if the story is really good. I think one guy who's an example of being able to do both really well is like Edgar Allan Poe. Phenomenal writer, has a great master of the English language, as well as tells really, really bizarre and interesting stories, you know?
Absolutely. That's a good one. We keep bringing up his name, but Tolkien, it's like reading poetry, but then you're also telling an epic fantasy story. It's truly a modern, or a marvel of modern writing. I'll also say Stephen King has a very good fantasy horror series. And it's one thing I did want to bring up, because fantasy branches off into so many genres. No genre is safe, really, because there's so many story elements from fantasy that are similar in other genres. But the Dark Tower series, if you haven't read that, I would not watch the movie. I heard the movie was terrible, and it's kind of silly to me that they would try and shove like a 7-book series into one movie. But the Dark Tower series is so good. And it's the hero's journey, told in a modern, very, very modern way. You have like the gunslinger who's the hero, and then you have his party. He starts gathering together and there's magic involved. And Stephen King is so good at taking iconic stories. And this is what I loved about The Dark Tower, is that he took other stories you'd be familiar with. So like Wizard of Oz and even some of his own books, and he ties them into this hero's journey. And I thought, I just loved it, because it's a master storyteller writing his magnum opus, like his life work. Like, this is what he's going to spend a lot of time with. So if you haven't read it, man, I would highly recommend reading at least the first one, going out and getting the Gunslinger.
I've never read The Dark Tower, and that's kind of right in my wheelhouse. Another thing, kind of as Stephen King's been brought up and The Dark Tower has been brought up, another thing I find really fun in fantasy is when there's blend, right? Like I think it's really interesting. It's like this dark fantasy type of story, but the main character is like this bounty hunter cowboy type of guy.
Yeah.
And that's the type of stuff that's interesting to me. I like when you're able to write a good story that's intriguing and done well, and kind of have it also be like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. This is ridiculous. But then you read it and you're like, oh, this is actually awesome. And yeah. I think that's something I think fantasy does really well. And I think partially that's why it's also really hard to do fantasy as a movie or a television series, because when you watch it, you see how ridiculous it all kind of is, right? Like, it's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But when you're reading it, or you're going at a slower pace, or you're playing a video game that's kind of meant to immerse you in the world more rather than give you like a 2-hour experience, it doesn't seem as weird. And I don't know. I don't know if you've ever thought about that before, but for some reason, fantasy as a genre struggles on screen. Like, Lord of the Rings was great. The movies were great. But that is 9 hours, or if you're watching the extended editions, 10 and a half hours worth of journey. Like, that's a long time to get immersed, and you really can. But, you know, I think of movies like The Golden Compass, which kind of struggled because you're trying to do this like really in-depth world in like an hour and 45 minute or 2 hour slot, right?
Yeah.
Harry Potter was great for the screen because the books were all kind of shorter to give you small doses at a time, right? And there were 7 books, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, you're looking at like 14 to 16 hours of screen time with Harry and the gang. So I don't know, and maybe that's why Game of Thrones was able to be successful. It's somewhat of a, as grounded as you can call fantasy, seems like somewhat of a grounded fantasy. And, you know, obviously there's the thing that's going to draw people in whenever you're talking about a show that has intense sexual content.
Yeah.
For some reason or another, we as human beings kind of get drawn into that, like, okay, what's it really all about, you know? It just is a little more grounded. Now, I never watched anything past like the second episode of Game of Thrones, but I've read the first book.
Okay.
So a somewhat more grounded universe. And then I don't know if it was just the right timing or what, but that's had a huge impact on the fact that now it's kind of paved the way. There's going to be a Lord of the Rings series on Amazon. They're doing the Wheel of Time as a series on Amazon, which,
oh man,
Wheel of Time, I'm looking forward to a lot. Now, I have never finished Eye of the World, but I'm looking forward. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess we can't talk about fantasy without bringing up the Wheel of Time series. And I actually finished, and I've only read the first one, the Eye of the World. But it is a book series is what I hear. It is. I mean, I think there's 14 books, and they're all, I mean, these aren't light reads. These are door stoppers of books.
Yeah. Yeah. You're looking at each book taking you, if you're a fast reader, it's going to take you like 12 hours to read it. They are meaty books, man.
Yeah. It's a time investment for sure. But I remember I read it because I went online and I wanted to read, because I'd already finished Lord of the Rings. And I was like, I want to read the monumental fantasy books. I want to say that I've read them. And so the one that's always near the top, there's always like three. It's always Lord of the Rings. It's always Game of Thrones. And then Wheel of Time. That one, everyone pays ultimate respect to Wheel of Time. And what's crazy is the original author, what's his name? People are going to...
Robert Jordan.
Kill me for now. Yes, Robert Jordan. He actually passed away before finishing his series. So if you can imagine writing an epic fantasy for so long that you actually can't finish it. He had Brandon Sanderson came on board and finished the series for him, which kind of helped Brandon Sanderson take off in his own right. But it's such a huge series that he actually passed away before finishing it. And but what I hear is, I mean, just based off the first book, it's everything that is fantasy. It's got the magic, and it's definitely high fantasy. There's a magic system involved. But it's awesome. It's really good. Definitely finish the first book, but funny story. Silly enough, I wanted to read the second book, and I went to my local bookstore and bought what I thought was the second book. And I was like, man, this is not as big as I thought it would be. And I realized after buying it and starting it that it was part one of the second book. I guess the second book was printed both as a full book and also in two parts. So I accidentally only bought half of the book. And that kind of discouraged me from reading it because I wanted to read the whole story. So I'm still looking for, because my used bookstore that I go to all the time, has every other book. I swear it has every other book in the series except the second book. I don't know what it is. I can never find the second book as like a full book. So I own half of the second book.
Do you try the library? I mean, you could even put like a hold on it.
I could. Yeah, I guess I haven't really looked into the fantasy section of my local library. But that's probably my next step here. But I just really want to own it. That's the thing. I want it.
Okay.
Part of collecting this series for me is to have it just sitting on a bookshelf and being like, yeah, I read all 14 of those. Because it is impressive to see an entire series lined up, like a big series lined up.
Oh, yeah. That might take up a whole row, man, on a shelf. They're thick books, lots of them, 14. It might be close.
Part of me also wants to collect the hardbacks. There's something, because he came out with paperbacks and hardbacks, and the hard ones are, the hard covers are really nice. But I don't know.
Yeah, I actually, this might sound dumb, but all of my favorite books, if I like them and I've read a paperback copy, I actually, if I'm really proud of them, I do buy the hardback copies. That might sound dumb. Like, I've got hardback copies of all the Lord of the Rings and paperbacks and like beat up books. Like, I read the series a ton of times. And
no, it's not, man. That's awesome.
And I've got this really awesome edition of the Chronicles of Narnia. It was one of those Barnes & Noble classic, one of the leather-bound ones, and it's the whole series in one. I'll have to send you a picture of this. This thing is a beautiful book, and you can't find it anywhere. They don't even make it anymore. They don't even print it anymore, so I got a true collector's item on my hand.
Dude, that's awesome.
So I read that to my kids every day. We've been reading that for the last couple months, making our way through. So that's been fun.
That's awesome.
But kind of talking about the Wheel of Time more, I'm really looking forward to this because I am curious of how what I would consider to be a more traditional fantasy does on Amazon. Because I think that the Wheel of Time is kind of that stereotypical fantasy series. You have the Wheel of Time, you got Lord of the Rings, you got the Sword of Shannara that I think kind of all fall under that really kind of stereotypical fantasy. And I'm very, very intrigued to see how Wheel of Time does on Amazon, if they're still planning on keeping it out on schedule with all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very interested because, you know, I think Game of Thrones did really well because HBO put in a lot of production value to it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they brought in some pretty big iconic names, and I think they're trying to do the same with Wheel of Time. I think one of the leads is a pretty famous actress. She was the lady in Gone Girl, if you ever saw that.
Oh,
I can't remember her name. Her last name's like Pike. I don't know why I remember that, but I think it's her last name's Pike or whatever.
I can't remember. I'll find it.
But let's talk here a little bit. We got a few minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about what is something in fantasy that you like that you feel like not a whole lot of people do.
Ooh.
What's the underdog for you in the fantasy underdog genre?
Oh man. I'm gonna have to think about that one. I'll say that this is not so much an underdog. This is also something I don't like, but I'll come back to something I like that people don't maybe necessarily like. I'm not a huge fan of love stories in fantasy. I don't think it's always, to me, a little forced in fantasy, mainly because I think most kids reading fantasy or most people enjoying fantasy are probably males. That I would say, I'm not to say that girls don't read it or watch it, but I would say probably the vast majority of consumers of fantasy are men. So I'm not a huge fan of love stories in it, but let's see, what do I like that most people don't like?
Like your guilty pleasure.
My guilty pleasure fantasy. I am a huge fan of, this is going to sound weird, but I like when there are trolls in fantasy. I don't know why. I think they're a really cool, like, fantasy character. I like that they turn to stone when there's sunlight hitting them, when it's daytime. I just like how kind of dirty they are and how just like brute strength. So I'm a huge fan of trolls. I always loved when I played the Lord of the Rings, the video game, when I would get to fight one, because it was always a really big challenge. I like that there's different kinds of trolls. There's like the cave trolls. And then there's, if you really get into some fantasy, there's like the meadow trolls and there's like different kinds throughout the world. So I don't know if there's any troll freaks out there, but I really like trolls. Actually, I watched a movie recently called, I think it's Troll Hunter, and it was actually a really cool movie. It was basically a found footage style movie about these kids who meet a guy and his job is to hunt trolls in the Norwegian countryside. And he's basically supposed to keep them at bay. He's like, I can't let them come out of their areas and interact with the human world. So his job is to like fight all these kinds of trolls. And there's like the mountain troll, which is like literally as big as a mountain. And there's like a forest troll and stuff. And so it was actually a really cool modern fantasy take on like the found footage genre. So I think that also definitely fueled my love for trolls. But I would say, yeah, that's my underdog there.
Nice. Now, for me, my underdog, and I've talked to you about this before. I really, really liked the Warcraft movie. Nobody liked that.
Nobody liked that.
No one liked that movie. Now, I will say this. Like, I played all those games growing up, right? The RTS games as a kid. And I played a little bit of the World of Warcraft later on in adulthood, actually. I don't know why. Like, after the craze was over, I was like, I'm going to jump into this and see what the craze was all about. And supposedly I missed out on when the game was actually really good. But anyway, I liked the movie because it was just such a tropey fantasy film. And I was like, dude, this is just fun. It doesn't even...
Unashamed.
The script didn't have to be good. The story didn't have to be the most fulfilling thing. But just the fact that the special effects and the CGI was phenomenal, is so good. Like, it was incredible. And I think that's the thing. We just take for granted in films. Like, I was talking to my wife about this. We were watching Frozen 2. And I was like, you know, most people just probably take this for granted. But there's some really, really, really cool things in the animation of this movie. And you know, as a kid, I kind of had a dream that, you know, I'd be a cartoonist animator one day. So I've always been intrigued by animation and then just kind of always found interest in finding out how it works and all of that. But like, there's some really cool things done. And I think we take that for granted, right? Like the critics, they go to the movie and they give it a score based on how they feel about it. They didn't think about the fact that, you know, an animator might've worked for 3 months in order to get the character to do just the perfect pirouette. Right.
Yeah.
But man, Warcraft was just out of this world with the CGI. At least I remember at the time. And I remember it felt awkward because the CGI was really good, but the sets all looked a little funky. Like you could tell it was a studio shot film.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get the balance between the actual CGI characters and the sets to be totally seamless, but it was still pretty good. And I just remember being floored by like the special effects and all of that, which hardly ever happens to me in a movie, right? Because like I said, we all get spoiled. We all get used to it. We don't go to Avengers and be like, holy cow, like the CGI in this is fantastic, right? We're just like, it either was good or it wasn't, right? And no, that's like my guilty pleasure. I've always thought that the Warcraft series is very interesting. And the reason why I find it interesting, and maybe this just kind of points out who I am as a person, is it has that fantasy steampunk blend, which I'm kind of a sucker for, but it also has this really strange sense of humor. Like, it is a entire planet that is at war with itself or some type of evil force, and there's always something like comedic going on with the characters, and I love that. I love when stories don't try to always be so dark. Like I think really, really heavy stories like The Lord of the Rings are very good, and there's not a lot of room for humor in there and also feeling appropriate. But when a story sets the tone from the beginning, like, hey, we're gonna be goofy. Yeah. And we're going to have an epic story. I think that that's really fun. So that's kind of like my guilty pleasure. Loved that movie. I think I've read a couple of Warcraft books and stuff like that. Like, it's just, it's total like tropey fantasy, like stereotypical, like magic, wizards, lots of killing. And I've always enjoyed it. It's fun.
Yeah, man. I love the Warcraft. I played World of Warcraft a lot one summer in college, and it does have that goofy, that humor to it that I also appreciate. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. And I think humor is something that when it's done right in any story can make it just more fun. You know, you might not be writing something that's going to go down in the halls of time as a great fantasy epic. But if everyone who reads it or watches it is just like, hey, that was really fun. You know, that's I think more important to me. But yeah, that's kind of like my guilty pleasure here. But as we close out, let's just close out with what are we looking forward to covering in the future? Maybe one thing we could give a little taste of something we're looking forward to talking about on the podcast coming up here. We'll give a little sneak peek of something that might be yet to come.
We're off onto our next 10 episodes. Dude, I'm super interested and ready to talk about Dragonlance. I really want to bring Austin on here and have him share it. I mean, that is impressive. Really, it is, because I mean, I only read the first one, and I read it when I was older, so I think there's that sweet spot of getting hooked on it early when you're a kid, because when you get older, you're like, okay, like I get it, like I enjoy it, but it's a little too much action for me, and it's a little too goofy for me. But I'm very interested and excited to talk to somebody who got in real early and rode the wave of Dragonlance.
Yeah, and he's read a lot. Like, something that's great about Austin, and I think he's cool with me talking about him on this podcast, is he can read faster than any human being I've ever met. He's a very fast reader, so he could just cruise through one of those. And I remember even as kids, like, he could read those books just super fast reader. And yeah, he'll remember everything, which is crazy.
That's awesome.
So I, you know, as far as me, something I'm looking forward to talking about here is I recently have kind of been messing around with the Witcher series, and I've read the first book and the second, and I'm working on the third right now. And I've played the third game. I watched the Netflix series, and I'm excited to talk to you about that. I know that you have no experience with The Witcher. Did you watch the TV series?
No, I mean, okay. I had a roommate in college that was heavily into it. So my knowledge of it and my exposure to it is basically from him.
Okay.
I played a little bit of The Witcher 3, like the very beginning, but I basically have zero experience with it. So I'm excited to hear.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about that because it's kind of like a pop culture thing right now. And I have some pretty strong feelings about how each medium was using the character of Geralt to tell the stories within the Witcher universe. And I think that in some ways, and this is going to sound like a audacious statement, but I think in some ways, the video game tells the stories better than any medium. And that's just kind of like my sneak peek right there. Ooh. And for all of you out there who might have read it and you're like a novel purist, I understand. I get it. But yep. I actually, just a little sneak peek here, I think that the Witcher series in the books was very good. The first two books, the collections of short stories were incredible. And the first one, the first novel he does, I don't know, it's not sticking with me as well as the short stories were. And we'll talk about that a little bit more.
Good stuff, man. Exciting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But would anything you want to say before we say goodbye, Zach?
Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Love talking about fantasy. I think it's my second favorite genre. Horror still is king in my world, but fantasy is very, very close second. But I hope you guys enjoyed just maybe a little history of it and us talking about some of maybe your favorite fantasy stories. And definitely send us an email. Let us know what your favorite stories are, or book series or video games that we should try out. I'm definitely always looking for the next fantasy story for sure.
Yeah. And hopefully you guys enjoy this. One thing that I will say too is we might do the same genre more than once because, I mean, fantasy is huge and we'll just talk about different things. So if you guys are thinking this is the only time we'll talk about fantasy and we missed all these things, it's more that we're trying to fit this into an hour. We'll talk about as much as we can and we will revisit fantasy at some time in the future. And we can do that as soon as you guys would want us to, or as late as you guys would want us to, but we won't do it in our next Genre Crush episode. But if you want us to revisit fantasy because we didn't mention your favorite story, that's all right. Let us know, and we'll get to it. We got a lot of time. Zach and I were still relatively young men. I can't even talk. Relatively young men.
We are one now.
we are one man, Zach Cody. But we'll get to a lot of things, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please be sure to let us know what you think and head over to our website where you can find out more about what we do. And we will talk to you next time on Parallel Quest. Bye-bye. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. Please be sure to head over to steellakestudio.com to see our website and more about who we are. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at
parallel quests so you can get involved with the conversations we are having on a daily basis. Thank you to Jake Butler for providing our bumper music, and we will see you next time on Parallel Quest.